A painting depicting an ancient barbarian king. Strange glyphs, dismissed by scholars, but sought by the forces of evil. And two men determined to find the truth behind it all. And the truth behind what is called the Ilsley Variant. An adventure written by Rick Hudson and published by Chaosium, Inc. A live play presentation brought to you by the Miskatonic University Podcast, with John Hook as the keeper of arcane lore.
Okay, welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast. This is going to be our first actual play. I'm Keeper John.
I'm Keeper Merv.
And I'm Keeper Dan.
And in this particular game, I'm going to be the keeper, and Dan and Murph are going to be the investigators.
Yay!
So
we're doomed.
You guys are doomed.
That's awesome.
Murph and Dan don't even know this yet. So the adventure that we're going to be playing is one of the Halloween adventure contest entries from the 2011 Chaosium Halloween contest. And it's called Dead Leaves Fall, or that's the name of the book is Dead Leaves Fall. And the adventure that we're going to be playing is by Rick Hudson, and it's titled The Ilsley Variant.
Cool. Never read it, so I'm awesome.
Yeah, I don't have that book, so
I thought it would be sufficient. Yeah, I thought it would be sufficiently rare enough, you know, that, you guys might not have it or have heard of it. And I did some poking around, and no one has done any kind of actual play of this adventure yet. So we should probably be the first.
Sweet.
So in in this episode, we're going to create characters. So we're going to kind of fall back on our character creation series and do it ourselves.
Now, as Keeper Dan, I'm sorry, John, I'm going to ask a question. I just got in the big gold book, the BRP main book, and they have cultural roles that you can put in based on, when you're doing your character creation. Uh-huh. And I was wondering if I could use those as well, the cultural modifiers. They're not going to do anything other than... maybe adjust my size typically, or something, depending on what race I choose. I think is how that's working.
Sure, go ahead.
Cool. Thank you.
I think we're also going to use out of the brand new Cthulhu by Gaslight traits, but we'll get to the traits after skills. So we'll do we'll roll characteristics. We'll figure out our sanity, magic points, and hit points. We'll assign our skill percentages, by our skill points. And then after skill points, we'll roll traits, because some traits might have the ability to modify some of your skills. So I want to do that. I want to do that after the fact.
Right. Gotcha.
So, sounds good.
So you guys can use real dice or virtual dice. Doesn't matter to me. But we'll start with our characteristics.
Cool. I'm using virtual dice. I'm all fangled up in the virtual dice thing for some stupid reason.
There you go. And you guys can, when I create characters, since there are five stats that are 3d6, I typically roll 3d6 five times and then just assign them amongst the five stats. Or if you guys just wanted to go straight down the list and do it as you need to do it, that's fine too, but so you guys
old
go ahead.
D&D method one, yeah, that's
right.
Gotcha.
So let's go ahead and do your characteristics.
All right. Let's see here.
I've got actual dice here. I'm just not a fan of computer rollers.
That's fine. And for those who are curious about computer rollers, I run Linux, and there is a small command line program called Roll Dice, and it is absolutely awesome. You can throw in any possible combination of dice rolls you can think of, and it will spit out a whole bunch of results for you. So in the matter of a click here, I should have my 5 3d6, and I'm going to give it the random tag just to make it even more random than it normally is. And it takes it a little bit longer when you give it the random tag, but it's fine. I like waiting. I don't mind. Since you're doing it manually, it shouldn't be a big deal. So I think I'm going to, I might eat my words on this, but I wanted to play a guy who was a kind of an antiquarian book dealer.
I like it.
Kind of thinking about Johnny Depp's character from,
I don't know the name of it, but I know what you're talking about.
That's what I was thinking of. I'll think of the name of that movie in a minute, but that's what I was thinking of. It's not an actual career, but, you know.
It is in The Investigator's Companion.
Oh, is it really? Oh, let me pull that up.
Book dealer's in there.
Oh, sweet. Hang on a second. Let me pull that up real fast. Because
that's one of the ones I was looking at as a possibility, too.
Oh, sweet. Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Do that.
But
let's see. Let me pull up The Investigator's Companion real quick. I have it on PDF for those listening. Yep.
It's under Miscellaneous Occupations, page 45 of the book. Starts with antique dealer, then does book dealer.
There we go. That's what I want.
There you go. There's your occupation. And you know, while we're rolling dice, and since Call of Cthulhu, you know, your occupations are not dependent upon your characteristics or dependent upon your skills. Do you guys have ideas on what occupations? Obviously, Murph's going to be a book dealer. What about names? Anybody have any of that in mind?
Not yet, honestly.
Yeah, not quite yet.
Okay, no names. Murph's going to be a book dealer. Dan, what about you?
I was thinking either maybe antique dealer or possibly reporter, if that would mesh well with the scenario.
I think it would. Both of those are fine choices. When I was trying to decide on a scenario to run, I was flipping through this copy of Dead Leaves Fall, and I was like, what do I want to run? And I started reading this Isley variant by Rick Hudson. Really well done. Really well done scenario. You know, and these things are only like 10,000 words a piece. And he did a great job in 10,000 words. So I was very excited to run this. So I think this will be great.
Yeah, that is one of the tricky things of when you've got people who are experienced in the game, you know, trying to find something that's pre-published that they don't already own.
Right.
Okay, I've got my main stats rolled up. Now I just gotta assign them. This person basically wound up very average. Let's see here.
It's in this Volume 2 of The Investigator's Companion? Or Volume 1?
Volume 2, Occupations and Skills.
Okay, yeah. That's all right. So, yeah.
Page 45 of the book.
I'm extremely average as well, by the way.
Excellent.
I have one decent stat. I'm going to let you guys try and figure out where that's going to go.
It wouldn't be Dex, would it?
No, that's too easy. There, John, I'm going to put it in appearance. Not really.
Let's see here.
And then when you're done with those 3d6s, your size and int are 2d6 plus 6.
And holy. All right. Well, my int is nice, so.
That'll help with your hobby skills.
Yep. My size is not so nice.
Big or small?
Small. slightly smaller than average. All right, now that I got that done, let me pull up that PDF.
There we go. All right, got all my attributes assigned.
Book dealer, there we go. All right, and just so everyone knows, I've got a strength of 9, a con of 10, a size of 9, a dex of 15, an appearance of 10, an intelligence of 17, and a pow of 12. So.
What about education?
Did I not say education?
Nope.
Holy crap, I didn't. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, I missed one somewhere. Hang on.
3d6 plus 3.
No, oh, I haven't rolled education yet. That's why. 3d6 plus 3. I get a 12 on education. That's pretty pathetic considering I just rolled 3 dice. That's as bad as my 2d6 plus 6 there.
Yeah, okay. I'm not all that, you know, particularly awesome here either. I've got strength of 8, con of 10, size of 10, dex 11, appearance 14, intelligence 11, pow 15, education 14.
Very good. So now you really do need to start thinking about your occupation, Dan.
Yep. And reporter seems to be what's calling to me here.
I like it.
Let's see. Reporter or photojournalist? Let's see.
Photojournalist would be neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll go with that. Just guy carries around the camera.
Oh, book dealer gets +1 to education.
Uh-huh.
Sweet.
That's why I love using this, the Investigator's Companion. It has so many cool little perks.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, for some of them, you know, like photojournalist doesn't come with any extra perks. But it's got, you know, a good description of how it works and then the skills that go with it.
And I get 1d20 plus 40 points in bookbinding and printing history skill.
Yep.
Very good.
Yeah, isn't that cool? It gives you a new skill.
That's pretty awesome.
A nice base chance to it. You can add more to it.
Yeah, because that's just the base in it. You can up it with your occupation skills. Skill points.
Yep, and so my base in bookbinding, and it's bookbinding / printing history. So is that 2 skills?
No,
or is that one? It's 1 skill.
I would call it 1. Yeah.
Just checking. So my base in that is 58.
Very good.
That's nice. That's a really good base.
For core creation, no skill can be above 75%.
Okay.
Other than ones that get calculated, like own language.
Okay, all right. So I've marked all my skills on my sheet, my profession skills.
Mm-hmm. Yep, me too. So, just finished that.
So your education times 20, those will be your occupation points.
Right.
So go ahead and spend those.
So that gives me 260. Occupation points.
Is that after you added the +1 education?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I ended up with 280 career points. What I did is I counted up all my skills. I've got 8 of them. And do the 280 divided by that. So I have 35 that I can just put on each on top of the base, which gives me some decent start points. And I can kind of maneuver them up and down a little bit after that.
Yeah, level them a little bit after that.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to just pull up a calculator and just place them where I think I'd like to see them instead of giving a, you know, dividing them out equally between them.
That's good.
Yeah. That's always my start point is doing it like that. And then I adjust after.
And you said nothing over 75, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. All right. So I'm going to give me a decent library use skill first off. Since I'm a bookbinder, that makes sense for me.
I think so.
So we're going to say, I'm going to give me 30 points, actually, in which will give me a 55 library use. I might come back and adjust these later.
Oh, sure. I do that too. I like assign those initial points to something and then come back later and go, I've got a few left over. I'm going to throw them back into this instead and then re-raise it.
I'm going to actually just give me 5 points to drive auto because I don't use that a whole lot. And if I'm a book dealer, I'm not a car racer or anything. So the bare minimum on that is probably more likely.
Sounds good.
And John, why don't you explain credit rating while I figure out how much I want to give to it?
Yeah, credit rating. In fact, I'll pull it right from the book here. Credit rating is narrowly how prosperous, confident the investigator seems to be. The investigator's chance to panhandle or get a loan from a bank or business. And it's also the chance for the investigator to pass a bad check or to bluff pass a demand for credentials. Credit rating, I really enjoy credit rating because it really is, it's almost like your personal business card, you know?
Right.
Depending upon how strong your credit rating is, it has the potential to affect how people would react to you. So, yeah, good credit rating is always good.
Yeah, I just sank 30 points in my credit rating.
There you go. That's going to be very good for you.
Well, I'm a book dealer. I figure I have to float a lot of hot checks every once in a while. And then bargain makes sense for me to have a good, decent bargain. Unfortunately, your base on bargain is only 5, so I have to put a lot into it to get anything out of it. So I'm just going to put 25 into bargain for right now, and I might come back and adjust that later.
Okay.
Give me a 30 bargain. Accounting. Oh, let's see. What else do I have other than... Yeah, so we'll put 35 points into accounting. Give me 45 accounting. Navigate is going to be the bare minimum. Other language. I'm going to leave other language blank for right now until Dan gets a little further along, and then maybe we can conspire onto that one together.
I like it.
I'm going to sink some good points into persuade because I got a lot left over. I haven't spent nearly as much as I thought I would. Let's see. I'm going to put a whole bunch into persuade. A good 50 points into persuade.
Okay.
And then my bookbinding skill. The fact that I'm a bookbinder really makes me cool. That's a hobby of mine on the side. I didn't know I was going to get that skill, so that's awesome.
Yeah, and then in your profession, that's what basically you used for identifying workmanship and authenticity. I would think someone trying to bring in an old book that was actually made, you know, only 20 years ago instead of 80, the binding methods would be the giveaway.
Oh, damn, I hit +1. I did it in my head and ended up with 76, so I'm going to do it to 75, which is 17 points. It's an odd skill to have a max in, but I can't figure out why I would have anything else. In my own language for English will be EDU times 5,
mm-hmm.
which is 65, is my base. And I'm going to put another 20 points into that. I'm going to go ahead and lay 30 points into my other language, whatever it might be. Okay, Dan?
Mm-hmm.
Probably something like Latin or...
That makes sense.
We'll figure something out.
I think my other language I'm going to put on German.
Good grief. I still have 48 skill points left.
Isn't that a nice problem to have?
Yeah, that's awesome, I have to admit. So I'm going to go back and bump credit rating by another 10 points. Give me a 55 credit rating.
Wow, very good.
And I'm going to go back and put another 10 points into library use, which will give me a 65 library use. The one thing about this particular occupation is he didn't have very many skills to start with. So they're getting very specialized here very quickly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have 8 skills?
Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10... 10 skills, but I'm ignoring effectively 2 of them, so...
There you go.
You know what I mean? Let's see. 20, 28 points left. I'll put 10 more into persuade and give me a 75 persuade. That should come in handy.
Sure.
18 points left. 18 points left. Good grief. They're going to go into bargain. 10 more into bargain. Give me a 40 bargain. I got 8 points left. I'm going to put them into Latin and give me a 38 Latin.
All right.
So there's my occupational skills.
Now your hobby skills.
Woohoo.
Int times 10.
Yep, which is going to give me 170 hobby skills. And you can put these anywhere, right?
Anywhere. To include your occupation skills.
And this is where things get a little more fun. You're trying to flesh out your character in general.
Yeah.
Now, can I bump over 75 by using my occupation, hobby skills?
No.
Okay. That's a question I had to ask.
75% is the top that you can go to.
No, I had to ask. I had to try. Oh, I completely ignored an occupational skill. That's what I get for not paying attention. History, which I actually think I should have. So I'm going to sink some hobby points into that instead.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to dump a lot of hobby points into it.
There you go.
Give me a 70 history and take off 50 points. What else would this dude need? Fast talk. I'll put about... You think that should almost be a occupational skill for a book dealer, but we'll deal 30 points into fast talk.
There we go. Okay, there's all my career skills down. Now I've got 110 to put on whatever else. Let's see.
I am certain that I am forgetting something that's worth having. Did I mention I'm going to be a ninja book dealer? And I've just sank 50 points into martial arts.
There you go.
I'm just joking. I didn't do that. That would be awesome, though. I'm actually going to sink a good bit of the rest of my points into a cult, thinking that I've got, that I'm a book dealer. Maybe I deal in occult books.
Sure.
Which would make the Latin make sense. So I'm going to... 5% base. I'm going to give me, let's see. I only got 40 points left. I'm going to just put 35 into it right now. Give me a 40 occult, and I'm going to look and see what else I've missed. Maybe I can put those last 5 points in something else if I've forgotten it completely.
There. Okay. Got all mine assigned.
You did your occupational and hobby?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So now that you've finished doing your skills, taking from the Cthulhu, the brand new Cthulhu by Gaslight book, character traits. It's basically 6 tables. Each table is listed 1 through 20. So you'll roll 2 dice, a d6 and a d20. And when you read them off to me, read the d6 first and then the 20. And that will tell me exactly which of the 6 charts and which 1 through 20. And then you'll get a trait. Now, the way this is going to work, a lot of these traits are labeled with a D for disadvantage. These are completely optional, so if you roll a disadvantage and you do not want to keep it, then that's fine. We'll just drop it, and you don't have to keep it at all. But if you decide to keep it, I may award you, if it does not state it in the disadvantage itself, I may award you some extra skill points that you can use as hobby points, so you can put them anywhere.
Okay, cool. Okay. So, let's see. I'm going to roll a 3-7.
All right. So let's do yours first. 3-7.
Horseman.
It says a horseman. I think what we're going to do is, because that does sound kind of, Gaslight specific.
Yeah.
To make that a little more generic. Basically drive. So you actually have an affinity for driving. So take 1d6 plus 1. So roll that.
A 3.
Did you roll the 3 or roll a 2?
I rolled a 2.
Okay. So 3. So that times 10 is 30, so add 30% to drive.
Okay. Which gives me
nice.
A normal drive. Sweet, so it gives me a drive of 55. Awesome.
And then on your character sheet somewhere, just under, you know, somewhere where you got room for notes, put a character trait of...
drive auto.
Yeah, drive auto, or, you know, here it says horseman, just put, you know, driver. You like to drive. All right, so, Dan.
I got a 5 on my D6.
Okay.
And a 19 on my D20.
Oh, that's going to be probably pretty cool for you. All right.
That is a cool one.
The 19s and 20s on all of them are kind of interesting. Okay, so 5-19. Roll and keep one trait. If the trait was marked a D, player may choose to add any other trait. If the trait was not a D, player may choose to add an additional trait marked D. Okay, so roll your D6, D20 again. So roll it again.
All right. My official Q Workshop Call of Cthulhu dice. Let's see. Oh, I got a 1 and 1.
Wow.
And you know, having that does not necessarily mean anything. No. So choose any trait marked of D. Okay. All right. So it's interesting that you're rolling stuff that would be most helpful if you actually had visibility of the charts.
Yeah.
So
I tell you what, I'll pick one for him.
Well, I was going to say, Dan, do you have a trait in mind?
Since I haven't seen the charts, I know. You two have copies of this book, and I don't. So
I think we should give him crippled.
No.
I feel that.
Let's see. All right, so based upon the 519.
Why don't we just make him run it again?
Yeah,
roll your two dice again for that second time. We'll act like the 519 still works, but we'll ignore the 1-1. Since you can't actually choose. Sorry, John.
I got a
no. I like it.
1, a 1-10.
That's better, at least.
Yeah, artistic talent. So n times five skill points to musical, writing, or other artistic skill.
Ooh.
And you can choose specialty there too. So yeah, that's pretty neat.
Now, due to the 519 that you rolled earlier, you're going to get two traits. All right, from the 519, one trait will be advantageous, which is what this artistic is, and one will be disadvantage. You know, so you need to roll one that has a D. So instead of, since you don't have the ability to pick and choose, roll. We're going to have you keep rolling until you come across a disadvantage, and that'll be the disadvantage that you keep. But for the artistic talent, so you'll mark on your character sheet somewhere trait artistic talent. It's int times 5 in skill points, and you have to apply to anything that might be musical or writing or some other artistic skill. But basically, you get to pick, and tell us what you do.
Okay, so. My n times 5, my idea roll basically is a 55, so that gives me a 60, because art starts off with a 5%. And so, let's see. My first thought was to put it on writing, since he's a reporter, but that's a little too obvious. I think I am going to put that down under some other kind of thing. I'm going to put that down under a musical instrument.
Okay.
He's got 60 in ukulele.
Fantastic.
Wow. That is crazy.
All right, so now roll again, and we're going to look for a disadvantage.
All right.
I hope he hits a good one. I love disadvantages, personally.
519.
It's the one we did first. Yeah, do it again.
So do it again.
Yeah. 6-1.
Nope. Roll again.
4-7.
Nope.
Roll again.
3-2.
Yep, that's one.
There we go. Greedy. All right, so that's your disadvantages. You're greedy. Money is the investigator's god. Usually considers financial aspects of a situation above all others. May try to cheat others, perhaps including other investigators. Maybe. So that's you awesome. Are greedy. Money is your god. I love it.
Can I, okay. Just out of morbid curiosity, can I roll again just to see if I can get a disadvantage? I know that sounds crazy, but
sure.
I really want to just see if I can hit a disadvantage because I'm nuts, I guess. But
all right.
Yeah, the whole perks and flaws type of system has always intrigued me.
And I like that as an addition to Call of Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm. I played, I ran a game of Serenity for a while from Margaret Weiss Productions, and it uses the perks and flaws thing in there. And I was actually considering, you know, trying to kind of modify that into BRP.
It's done.
Yeah, they did it for you. They were listening.
Which is very nice. That saves me a lot of work. I like that.
All right, Murph. Roll the bones.
Okay, here we go. It's, let's see, a 4-5. 4-5.
No, roll again. Damn. Well, no. You just wanted to see if you can find one. You have yours. You have yours. You're good.
Okay.
All right. So that's cool. I like Mervs.
I like traits.
Yeah, the traits are cool.
Traits are cool. 4-5. Nose for weather.
So now, everyone roll a d10, and let's figure out your income.
I got a 4.
I got an 8.
All right, so Dan, nice. Your income is $45,000. And, oh, wow. You're a very wealthy book dealer. Sweet. $100,000.
Holy shit.
Is your annual income.
Which chart are you looking at? It's completely different from my 5.6 book.
Oh goodness. I'm sorry. I was looking at it for the present.
I was about to say.
1920s. Okay. 1920s. Here we go. Dan, you're 4, right? 3,500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Murph, yours is 7,500.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense.
I was looking at... I was looking at the present day, 1920s.
200,000 a year. My God, in 1920s, we are rolling in it, Dan. You know what I'm saying? All right.
And now, do you guys envision either of your characters being over 40 years old?
No.
No. No.
Okay. Then you can go ahead and just fill in things like your age and stuff like that. And then start.
I am going to raise him up a little bit here because otherwise my base age comes out to being 20.
Sure.
So I'm going to put another 10 on there and make him 30, which gives me another point of education.
Okay. So, yeah, I was going to say anything 10 above, you'd get another 20 occupation points. So, what's your base age, Murph? Education plus 6?
My base age would be 19.
Okay.
That's not going to work.
How old do you want to be?
30.
Okay, so that's... You're going to get... increase your education by mm-hmm. 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
Raise your EDU by 1 point, and you get another 20 occupation points.
Okay, cool.
So go ahead and spend those.
And now that I am a driver, I'm going to sink some points in the driver.
Okay. That is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, right.
You commented about, I'm just going to ignore driving. And then, boom, here you are. You're a driver.
But it makes sense because I got such a high roll on my income that maybe I can afford the nice cars.
Sure.
Yeah. And likewise, because I hit driver, I'm going to put some in navigate so I don't get completely friggin' lost everywhere I go.
See, look at that. Look at that. You can have a Cadillac Type 8 or something.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Or maybe a Packard or something. I don't know.
And have you guys already figured out your idea, luck, no... sanity, magic, and hit points?
I haven't. Yep. I have not. Why don't you tell us how to do that?
Your idea is int times 5.
Right, which I've got a great int, so I'm 85 idea.
Luck is pow times 5.
Which is a 60.
Your no is education times 5.
which just went up to 14, so 70.
Your sanity, same as your luck, is pow times 5. So whatever your luck is, that's what your sanity is.
Right, which is 60.
Your magic points are going to be the same as your pow score.
Right, so 12.
And your hit points, you're going to average your con and size. So con plus size divided by 2.
So 19 divided by 2.
And then I'm not sure if you guys have checked the damage bonus chart. If you tell me what your strength plus size is, I've got the chart right here. I can tell you if you have a damage bonus or not. So strength plus size.
18, I know. No.
Yeah, you have a plus 0.
Yeah, go for it. Dan?
Yep, so do I. I also don't have one.
So plus 0 for both of those. Okay.
And do you round up or down?
I round up. In fact, I think the book says round up.
Okay, just checking. So I'll have 10 hit points then.
Yeah, under the hit points section here, it says divide by 2, round up any fraction. And I've noticed throughout the entire Call of Cthulhu book, any fractions are rounded up. So I'm sure their thought was, the game is hard enough. Why are we going to penalize you on fractions? So
that's the truth.
So now that you guys have your money, you can go ahead and I'm not going to be too concerned about actual dollars and cents, but basically equip your characters and anything that's reasonable will be fair and available. Anything that's unreasonable, we're going to have to make a decision on that.
Okay, so I can't have that flamethrower.
Yeah, well, we're going to pass on the flamethrower, yeah. Although that would, I'm sure it would be fantastic in your bookstore.
Well, you know, it's almost a necessity.
And actually, once you guys get that done and name your characters, we're basically done with character generation. We could jump right into the adventure and get started if you wanted.
Holy crap. Well, let me find some stuff to write down for equipment real fast then. We need to do backstory, though, first, right? Who we are, that kind of jazz. Do we know each other?
Yeah, and the location is going to be Arkham. So,
Cool.
So go ahead and kind of have that in mind. Just kind of, you know, put something together, and you guys are in Arkham. I would kind of like it if you guys already knew each other. It could be through professional interests or personal. Doesn't matter to me. If you guys already know each other, that gets that portion that's always, it always seems very, awkward in a lot of Call of Cthulhu games, you know, mm-hmm. Why are these people adventuring together? So if you guys are already pals, you know, that'd be great.
All right. And what's the year?
It's unspecific, so we'll just say 1924.
Okay.
That way I can take a look at cars and determine which is available.
That's a good point. Or if you want, we're in Arkham. Are you going to be an Arkham-based photojournalist there?
Yeah, I think so.
Since I'm a car buff, evidently, do you want me to just buy the car and then you don't have to worry about it? You can take the bus or something else?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's up to you.
I didn't put any points in drive, and where there's, I think that works out pretty good. I mean, downtown area, I mean, you could just walk. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Now the question is, can I afford a Silver Ghost?
Bentley or Rolls?
Rolls. Let's see if I can afford a Rolls in 1924. How much does this thing sell for?
Okay.
Holy crap. Sorry.
What?
Sorry, I just found the original 1924 Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost Boattail Speedster. Original price was $94,000 in 1924. I need to find me something a little more reasonable. Good grief. That is insane. Oh my gosh, that just freaked me out. I really want a Packard. Let me see how much a Packard go for.
So I got mine put together pretty well.
And do we have a name?
His name.
Yeah, I was going to say, in general, Dan, why don't you introduce us to your character?
Well, investigator's name is Wallace Kerstad. He usually just goes by Wally to most people. It only has Wallace on the byline whenever he's lucky enough to get something actually printed. He's 30 years old, and he's from Boston. And let's see. He's the strength of 8 and con of 10 kind of lean me towards not being terribly active on the combat front during the war. So he was in the typing pool. He basically was in there just doing a lot of office work and stuff during the war. He learned German during that time because there was a lot of information and communiques going back and forth that he was having to type up, and so he picked up on that. He's got 2 ex-wives, so most of his income is rapidly, you know, vanishes as soon as he gets it, so he's always on the lookout for getting more cash. He's got a small apartment located above a deli, which always tends to smell good, and so he's always a little bit hungry. You know, he's usually walking around with, a suit that's clean, but not necessarily well-pressed, not custom-tailored at all, just, you know, off the rack. He seems to only own one tie, and it's not very attractive, but it gets people's attention so that way he can take their picture. So he wears this butt-ugly tie. the nicest thing that he owns is he's got a camera that's like the nice high-end camera that it's light enough to carry it around all day and takes good quality, clean shots. Everything else he has is pretty much second-hand. So, yeah, that's pretty much Wally. He has contacts all over town, and he's just on the lookout for anything worth reporting on, getting some shots, and trying to get a paycheck from one of the local papers.
Oh, so you're not on retainer for one paper. It's any publication, local or national.
Yeah, that's what I'm figuring. He's more freelance.
Sounds good. I like it. I like the divorce angle and all that. That's great.
Yep. I had to come up with something for the greedy.
Yeah.
So so his money's usually gone.
I like it. Murph, introduce us to your character.
Well, before I do that, Dan, do you want to be related? We can be cousins. That would, because there's going to be a big disparity between my character and yours on the social scale. Because I have money and you have none.
Why would these guys hang out at all?
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, let's do that. That's how we know each other, at least. And we can say we both rely on each other for whatever. You know, if I need photos taken up a rare book to put in a catalog for auction or something, I'll call you to do it. That'll give you a little extra income. So my name's going to be Richard Kerstad. We're fraternal cousins. I'm a 30-year-old book dealer based out of Arkham. I'm also a bookbinder because I have a whole lot of skill points in that. I own a nice little shop there in downtown Arkham. I specialize in antiquarian/occult books, and I am constantly on the hunt for those, and I sell them across the country to wanting buyers. Personal life is basically I have none. I'm kind of an odd guy. No wife, no kids. The only pleasure I take is actually driving through the countryside.
Very good. What is the name of your shop?
You would ask me something I hadn't thought of. Let me figure out a name for the shop.
Okay.
Me pull up my faithful Google. And I drive a Packard 6, by the way. I have a nice Packard 6.
Yeah. Okay. Packard Type 6. Very good.
And let's see, what would be a good name for a bookstore? Any ideas, guys? Seriously, because I'm at a blank right now.
It's called This Isn't a Library.
You can't afford these books.com. No. I really don't know. Let's see.
That's something I've had to really...
I'm trying to think of one that would work.
Fits within the...
In the 20s, though, yeah, if you want to be, you know, period faithful, they rarely had flamboyant and colorful names. So what's your character's last name?
Kerstead. That's what I was thinking.
It could be Kerstead's book binding or Kerstead's books, that kind of thing.
Or rare books.
Yeah, Kerstead's rare books.
Let's see. I'm actually looking on the Antiquarian Booksellers Association website right now to find some
nice
bookseller names. I figure that'd probably be the best place to go. Search. Let's see. Yeah, we'll just say Kerstead Rare Books, I guess would be what it is.
Sounds good.
How did you spell Kerstead there, by the way?
Well, originally I had it as Kerstead, where I put it down as Kerstadt. That just kind of popped out of nowhere, but we can do it more as Kerstead.
That probably would have been something it would have been changed to on Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I probably, if your name was how about this? You go with Kerstead. I'm going to change my name to Kerstead because it sounds more American and I might be, it's better for a business sense.
Ooh,
that works.
That is awesome. I really like that. And it helps also establish, you know, cousin thing that you guys aren't brothers, you're more cousins.
Right.
I like it.
All right. I've got my 50 feet of silk rope.
My bullseye.
10-foot pole.
Bullseye lantern.
Right. Bullseye lantern. My caltrops are primed and ready.
Excellent.
Okay. So if...
They double as D4s.
Right. I love it.
So if you guys are set and ready, let us begin the... And I guess I said it's the Isley variant. I think it's, I'm going to pronounce it Isley, but it looks like Illisley, the Illisley variant. The Illisley variant by Rick Hudson. So y'all ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yep.
Okay. It is Friday, October 31st, 1924. And the two of you have been invited. Y'all are guests. Of Clive White. He's holding his annual Halloween party. It's a nice soiree. Clive is basically a philanthropist in Arkham. And so he just likes to have some of his personal friends, some of his business partners, some of the well-to-do, you know, Arkham's finest, have them come out to his house for his favorite Halloween or favorite holiday, which is Halloween, and just have a nice social event. It's a private party, and so while there will be booze there, it's not publicly noted on the invitation. So this is a nice place for people to get away and just kind of get a little saucy and enjoy some of the things that are currently prohibited at this time. So you guys have already arrived at the party, and his home is quite lavish, and he's redecorated as he does every year for the Halloween. He redecorates all of the paintings and art sculptures in the house to be Halloween themed. And he also has all of his, most of his furniture moved out. So it really, he does turn the ground floor of his home almost into a full, art gallery. So where people can just kind of wander through, with snacks and drinks and take in the culture. And the place is just jam packed with people. Most people are milling about the different paintings and sculptures, and are maybe taking personal notes and things like that, because Clive also raises money by selling and will auction off a lot of these paintings later on in the year, you know, later on in the year before Christmas. But right now is the display of the artwork that he's collected throughout the year, and the artwork that he's planning to auction off later. And they all have a Halloween spin to them. They all have something, it seems, kind of dark and foreboding about them. So you're in a crowded personal home that's been redesigned as an art gallery. You each have a snack and a drink. What would you like to do?
Is there a library anywhere in here?
You have, while you're not close personal friends with, roll your credit rating for me.
Okay, hang on a second. Credit rating. I rolled a 63, and my credit rating is a 55. So what does that mean there, Dan? John, sorry.
That means that your invitation to this party was primarily due to your status in Arkham as one of the well-to-do, but you have not personally done any book business with Mr. White, so your knowledge on whether or not he has a library is none. You have no idea. He may or may not have a library, but the ground floor of his home has been converted into an art gallery, so you don't see any library anywhere.
Cool. Is there anyone here I recognize?
Give me a luck roll.
I'm just going to say there's nobody here I recognize.
All right. And it's not, you know, obviously you haven't done a head count, but just the gallery.
The sheer numbers.
Well, just sheer number of people, but this particular gallery that you're in right now, which would probably maybe be the dining room, okay, under normal circumstances, there's no one in here that that you know. And
for the record, I rolled a 94 there.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is each of y'all's POW, by the way?
I have a POW of 12.
15.
Dan, what is your character doing? And again, you're Wally, and Murph, your character's first name?
Richard.
All right. Richard and Wally. All right. So, Dan, what's Wally doing right now?
He is basically making sure that his glass stays full, and occasionally maybe slipping one of the snack things into a pocket. But he's also looking for good angles to take a picture, trying to basically get a nice idea of, you know, okay, from over here I can get a shot, it'll show, you know, a good amount of the room. Maybe subtly trying to listen in on bits and pieces of conversation, trying to identify some of the people okay. that are in there.
So you've got your camera and you're taking pictures, and a tall older gentleman with white hair walks up, and both of you instantly recognize that it is Clive White, Mr. White himself. And he walks up and shakes each of your hands. Welcome, welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for coming. And he seems to be a little bit at a loss as to your names. He's sure that everyone here should be here because you had an invitation, but the vast number of people, he does forget names. So he extends his hand and says, Clive White.
Richard Kerstead. Kerstead's Rare Books.
Ah, Mr. Kerstead, welcome. Yes, I've been meaning to get down to your shop.
No problem. I was curious. Do you have anything here you might want to let me look at? Such wonderful works of art. You must have some books around here somewhere.
Well, thank you. Yes. Tonight is not a night for bookkeeping or business. Tonight's a night for fun and enjoyment. So please, partake. I have some of the finest whiskey, Canadian whiskey, and please enjoy yourself. And we can certainly talk business at a later date. You, sir.
Wally Korstad, from reporter from local paper here, got a notice that you might want to have a little bit of nice publicity about your shindig going
on. Thank you, sir, for coming on. Yes, I actually do want to try to get the word out. You know, there's a piece that I think you would be quite interested in. I want to really bring some highlight to. I think it has such boldness to it that I think
absolutely. Yeah, if there's any pieces here that you want a good picture of, or any guests that you particularly want to make sure that it's known that they're around, I can make sure that to get an angle that they were seen here with your displays.
You know, I might take you up on that. We'll have some pictures taken with me and the mayor, and also with the dean of the university. That'd be fantastic. But come. Follow me into the parlor. I want to show you this. I think you'll both find this fascinating.
All right.
So as you guys go into the parlor, there's a group of people standing in front of a painting. You have a hard time seeing it right now due to the people standing in the way. But they're there. One guy's standing there in front taking some notes on it and everything. Every painting has a little bit of a placard next to it to describe either the painting and the artist and everything. But as you guys approach, the folks that were standing in front of the painting kind of notice that more people are approaching, so they move on. You're standing before a painting that seems pretty interesting. Nothing too fantastic about it. It's just interesting looking. It depicts a dark-haired and sullen-eyed man who looks to be well muscular, in his 40s or so, sitting upon a stone throne. And there's a stone floor in front, and he's holding a chalice in one hand and a sword lays across his knee, with his other hand resting on the sword, and it's just, dark shadows and everything. And there's, on the wall above and behind the character on the stone throne is, runic, inscriptions in the back. Dan, Wally feels very, drawn to this painting. He finds it very, very interesting. He's very compelled by the scripture, that's in the background of the painting itself, these runes that are on the wall. And so Mr. White stands there and he goes, "This I find very fascinating." Local man, actually, fantastic style, and there's a je ne sais quoi about it that really drew me to it. And I've been trying to tell everyone about it.
Yeah, that's...
What is it called? Yeah.
It's called The King on the Throne.
Yeah, it's different, I guess. What does it say in the background? Is it just...
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I don't know. It's just runes. It's probably just gibberish. But just look at the physique of the character. So strong and foreboding and sullen-eyed and raven-haired. And there's a strength about this painting. Mr. Gedney, Miles Gedney, the artist, is just he brings such life to it.
Oh, okay. Sure. And not really my cup of tea, I guess. Yeah. As a side there, but whatever.
Basically, kind of step back a little bit and get a nice framing and snap a pic of it.
Oh, yes. Please take a picture. And here, take one with me in front of it as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, reload the powder a bit and whoosh.
Fantastic.
Gotcha.
Oh, I see someone I need to say hello to. Gentlemen, please. Mr. Kristad, I will be talking to you soon, I'm sure, so we can take pictures around with me and the mayor.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
And with that, Mr. White dashes off into the crowd to go and greet others.
Well, we got snacks and booze. I'm good for the night.
Yeah, he's not going to sell any books. We might as well get drunk. I am driving, so.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's not far. I'll be okay.
Each of you make a POW times 5 roll. while you're making that roll, I'll continue. Mr. White leaves and you guys are kind of standing there with this painting, more patrons come up to view the painting. So they're kind of looking to push you out a little bit so they can come and check it out.
Okay. I rolled a 30
and I failed. I got a 78 instead of 75.
And Richard he's starting to kind of get it also. He's like, yeah, this is an interesting painting. I can't put my finger on why. And also, Wally, roll me your German language.
All right. Is at 60 and I rolled a 7.
Although you cannot read the runes, I mean, cause they're runes, they're not, you know, a language per se, but your knowledge of German language, you're familiar enough that a lot of runic languages have a base, or actually it's the reverse, that a lot of like Germanic and those older languages like Celtic and stuff like that have a root in runes. You feel like there's something significant, but you can't put your finger on it with those runes. So as you guys are kind of having this, you know, mild, curiosity peak on this, on the painting and as it pertains to the runes, you guys are being pushed out. This one gentleman kind of comes up and he's got a little notepad and he wants to make some notes on this painting. It's kind of pushing you guys out.
All right, well, I guess I'll just kind of slide out of the way there.
Watch it,
Al. Okay. So he steps up. He's going to start observing the painting as you guys walk out.
Anything distinguishing about the guy? Noteworthy?
Give me a spot hidden.
And new.
No, he's just a guy. So what do you guys think for any plans for the rest of the party? It's a pretty, you know, high class affair. People are, you know, just basically snick-snacking. There's no sit down formal anything. People just basically wander with their drinks and snacks, and basically the party, it really doesn't have any kind of organization to it, other than people just kind of show up and observe the gallery, and so people are coming and going quite frequently. So you can see the head count is rotating quite quickly.
Okay. Well, I'm good. I think I'm going to go stare at my car for a little while and then probably go back to the office and get a little work done.
Okay.
Yeah, I spent a good part of the evening with a little notebook, also just kind of jotting down impressions, and if there's anyone who I recognize, I know who that is, I'm going to write down that they were there, and you know, maybe some of the names of more noteworthy pieces that I take pictures of, you know, for writing up the article.
Okay. So the party ends. You guys basically retire to your own respective homes, turn in for the night, and time passes. You know, so, you know, Friday the 31st passes, it's Saturday the 1st, Sunday the 2nd. A couple of days start going by, the weekend passes. Throughout the weekend, you guys, your mind just keeps returning to that painting, King on the Throne. Just over and over again, you guys will be, you know, Richard might be driving through the countryside, trying to enjoy the peace and quiet of the Arkham outskirts, and suddenly he's thinking about the King and the Throne again. Wally, you know, you're trying to figure out how to you know, cut that next bill and get the wives off your back, and you know, where can I get this next piece done? And before you know it, you're thinking about the King on the Throne again. You're like, what is it about that painting? And it is just, each of you are just being hounded by the memory of this painting over and over again.
Hmm.
The whole weekend goes like that. And now it's Monday, November 3rd. And, you know, on Monday morning, you guys each wake up. And the very first thought on your mind is King on the Throne. Oh my God, what is it about this painting?
Yeah, that's not normal for me. I'm either thinking of books or the Packard there. So this is somewhat disheveling. I'm in a foul mood now. Goddamn painting. I don't know what the deal is.
I'm thinking of hitting the library and seeing if there's anything I can look up on it, since it seems to have kind of grabbed me.
Nah, I'm going to call my cousin and see if he's having the same problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that makes sense. You guys experienced this at the same time. Saw the painting at the same time.
Yeah, whenever you call, you have to basically call the deli downstairs, and then they come up and get me because I don't have my own phone.
That makes sense. All right. Roscoe's Bakery? You know, never mind. I'll just drive over. Shit. That's funny.
So you guys decide to go to the library together?
Yeah, I'm going to go over there with him. Yeah, what the hell?
Okay.
Yeah,
if he pops up before I head out, then absolutely.
Okay. It's bugging me anyway, so.
All right, so when you're at the library, you know, the element about that painting, I mean, there's really, you know, there's the painting itself, you know, it's really those runes, you know. And then, of course, there's the artist. But so you guys want to each of you give me a library use check.
38.
Was that a success?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. I have a 75 library use.
There you go.
Yeah. And I have a 50 in it, and I rolled 11. Sweet.
Very good. Just barely outside of impale. And also, let's go ahead and do this, because you never know, we might continue to use these characters in future adventures. If you're successful on a skill, go ahead and mark it, and then we'll roll for skill improvements at a later date.
Okay.
So as you guys are in the library, you guys each, you know, you spend about 3 hours in the library doing some research. And it really boils down to, as far as what is searchable in the library as it pertains to a painting, especially a brand new painting, you know, something that hasn't been documented. You know, and it's not like it's a 500-year-old painting that has a lot of history, you know, that could be documented in books. This is a brand new painting. So really the only kind of thing that you could research about it in the library are the runes, okay? The runic symbols that are in the painting. And based upon your own memory of what you've done
and my photographs.
So yeah, you've had plenty of time to develop those pictures. Actually, give me a photography roll. I want to see how well you may or may not have developed them.
I got a 61 and my skill 75.
So you've done a fantastic job. It's just, you know, your regular development skills. So you've got some clear photos of these of the painting and the runes, okay? And all of, for each of you, even dividing out your work, as far as you can tell, these runes don't exist. This is completely fictitious.
Mm.
Okay. So also, your library research, it has confirmed for you that the runes that are depicted in the picture, they look like they're elaborate Nordic hoaxes. So, you know, you can find quite easily Nordic rune information in the library. But the runes that are in the painting, they're definitely different. They seem like they're following some form of grammatical logic, but it's not a logic that you can find any kind of textbook to decipher. So they look like gibberish, yet it's, you know, it seems like they might not be gibberish. It's hard to tell, but it looks like they're related to Nordic runes. In fact, you would say, based upon your research, the closest contemporary language would be modern Icelandic. So they seem possibly related to modern Icelandic language, Icelandic runes, but everything that you can tell so far shows that it's fictitious. So it's probably just simply something made up by the artist. Okay. So with that in mind, I'm going to let you think about what your next move is. We're going to go ahead and pause the adventure here, and we'll pick it up on our next actual play recording.
All right.
So y'all having fun creating characters and getting started?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't done this in forever, to be honest with you, with Call of Cthulhu, at least.
Yeah.
So good. I think this will be fun. This will be a nice addition to the podcast stream.
Absolutely.
Yep. And all right. Whenever, yeah, that's it. Good job.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's sign off, and we'll pick it up again at another date.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yep, have a nice one.
Class dismissed.
The Call of Cthulhu role-playing game is property of Chaosium, Inc. The written works of H.P. Lovecraft are held in the United States public domain. All other works mentioned in this podcast are the property of their respective owners. Original content of this show is copyright of the Miskatonic University Podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license.